everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about everything from M-dashes to epiphanies to elephants. Everything will be on the table, because everything has to be on the table when you are writing. Your only limitation can be your own ceaseless curiosity. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier writing magazine on the internet, featuring book reviews, articles on writing and the writing life, and video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and Author is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their yearly conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, today I am visited by a guest. I first met Diane Hammond, let's see, it was almost two years, maybe even 3 years ago now, when she was touring with her sort of surprise bestseller, Hannah's Dream. And I was thoroughly entranced by Ms. Hammond and quite delighted, and so I am pleased to have her on the show with me today. And there she is now. Diane, welcome to Author to Author.
Well, thank you for having me. That was a wonderful first interview that we did together. It's always fun to talk to you.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I thought you had a great attitude towards writing and had the necessary enthusiasm for it, and you could express it, which not every writer can. A lot of writers love to write. In fact, really all writers love to write, but not all of them can really express it, and I thought you could, and it was just a lot of fun to talk to you. So how are things out in Minnesota? You've moved from the West Coast to the frozen tundra of Minnesota. How is that?
Yeah, well, I'm about as landlocked as you can get. But, you know, it's a wonderful place. The Minneapolis-St. Paul area is so arts-friendly and so literary arts-friendly. With Grey Wolf Press and a good number of organizations here that support writers. So I honestly am not as homesick as I thought I would be, but I visit the Northwest every day in my writing, because I'm putting together a sequel of Hannah's Dream. So in some ways, I haven't lost it all.
Yes, I heard that there was a sequel in the works. Why don't we quickly, before we get going, why don't you tell our listeners what they should run out and buy right now that you've got out, and then you can tell us a little bit about what's coming up.
Well, I think your description of Hannah's Dream as being a surprise bestseller.
Whoops, you've got an animal there.
Down. Okay, close the door on the dog.
She can't get on the show, yeah. I'm sorry. Only English speakers, unfortunately.
Well, that book is truly a surprise bestseller, and while I've had one other book out since then called Seeing Stars, which in fact is partly set in Seattle, it's about child actors in Hollywood, and it was not nearly the sweet read that Hannah's Dream was. So I'm now going back to writing about love and love between people and animals and why we do these crazy things that we do with the animals around us, but also how it can make us rally in families that we never might have expected to get together otherwise. So I'm having a great time with it, and it really does get me back home again.
Does it?
In fact, I have a geography in my mind, and it goes kind of like this. There's Minnesota, and then to the west of Minnesota is Idaho, and then Washington, and below it is Oregon. And if I keep my atlas in mind, we're hardly any miles apart.
It sounds about like mine, you know, your typical coaster in a certain way, I guess. But now, you're my guest, Diane, and you know the form. You know the format of the show. I ask you three questions, you ask me three questions. But as the guest, you get to decide if you would like to ask the first question or be asked the first question.
Oh, you know, I think I would like to ask you one. And it's kind of a one that I'm going to read to you, though hopefully not too painfully. I was reading your blog. Okay, I'm going to dive into your blog. And one of them you wrote, and I'm quoting you, "What would be hard, what would be painfully hard, would be if you wanted to write but were afraid to choose to do so." And that really resonated with me. So my question to you is, have there been times when you failed to choose to write? And if that's true, how on earth did you get up the courage to choose to do it again?
You know, it's a really timely question, Diane, because, no, I have never chosen not to write, but I have chosen to write against my truest interest. I have chosen my life. I've always known I had to write, but at various times I have written towards what I thought I ought to write or would be most sort of profitable for me to write, or really just what I thought, what I had sort of intellectually decided was best for me. And,
that
was really comparable to not writing at all.
And
it took a lot of courage for me to get up. To find the courage to write what I knew came easiest to me. Strangely, you would think it would be just the opposite, but it wasn't. Because in certain ways, those blogs were the first time since I was quite young that I allowed myself to write precisely what I wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very surprising for me that I was writing them, but it came so easily. It came so easily that I knew I was onto something. But I thought, well, you know, what can I do with this? Where can this go besides blogs and so on? And I'm starting to learn now. And now I've written a book. I just finished it this morning, as a matter of fact, based on that sort of writing.
How exciting is that?
It's very, very exciting. I had to finally put aside fiction. Because while fiction was interesting, fiction was very, very close to what I was doing. You know, there's a lot about fiction that is similar to what I want to do. But when I when I asked myself, what is it precisely you want to do in a book-length form, I realized it wasn't fiction, it was memoir. And yes, and I would never have guessed that as a young man, or when I started writing novels back when I was 25, 26. I'd done a lot of other stuff. I'd written theater and poetry and screenplays and some short fiction. But so in a way, I'd written many novels, but really they weren't, it wasn't what I truly wanted to write. But I didn't know I wanted to write. And really, I spent a lot of time in those blogs writing about write what you love. And I finally realized what I loved was not quite fiction. So, that was an excellent question, a most excellent question.
Well, the thing about that, too, because I can't do what you do. The daily blogs, I think it would kill me, but I'm also not a memoirist. I'm not somebody who draws from my own life except indirectly through fiction.
Yes.
But it really does raise the whole challenge of deciding for yourself not what you should write, but what you most love to write and what you will love to get up every morning looking forward to doing. And that's something
this. When I was writing the novel, and again, I love to write. I mean, I'm a writer. It's what I'm – that's how I'm – one of the ways I'm supposed to communicate with people. That I've always known that. But the difference between writing what really you're sort of directed to write and what you simply think you should write is almost night and day, even though it seems so close. And when I sat down to write the book I just finished, what came to me was, I know what I'm doing. And so many times I would sit down to write the fiction thinking, I mean, I know how to write, but I don't know I don't really know why I'm writing this story. I just know I want to write it, and I want it to be good, and I want it to publish it, and blah, 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 blah. But when I wrote this book...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when I wrote this book, every time I sat down, I thought, even though I don't know what the book is going to look like, I know what it is. I can feel within me what it is, and when I see that on the page, then I'll know it's done.
Oh, and that is the very best feeling of all. I think that...
Isn't it?
Well, and I'm doing the antithesis of what you just described, because I'm writing a sequel partly because my agent and editor challenged me to do so. And I never would have written, in fact, many times have said, oh, I would never write a sequel. But here I am doing it because I thought, they felt it was a good idea, and obviously...
Well,
how's
that going? Now, this is good, because this leads into one of my questions. And so I'd like to talk about that. Well, two things. Cool. First of all, ironically that your agent, I'm not sure if this is the same agent that this story pertains to, but I recall you told me a story that when you wrote Hannah's Dream, the agent you had at the time, I don't know if it's still your same agent, said this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the same agent?
Yeah, it's the same agent.
All right, so tell that story for the listeners who haven't heard it. Because I think you wrote about it for me, or I wrote about it in a blog or something, but go ahead and tell that story.
It's kind of painful because I was still with Random House then. I had my first book had been published. It was a two-book contract. I wrote Hannah's Dream. It was turned down not once but twice, flatly, by my editor who said, and I quote, "This is not your next book." and that's a whole lot worse to hear than this isn't a very good book, but between us,
right,
we can probably, you know, kick it up a notch. And so I went on and wrote my second book, which was published by Random House,
right,
and then wanted to revisit Hannah's Dream again. So I talked to my agent and said, you know, let's just float it out there. I'm not under contract. Let's see if anybody's interested. So two very long months later, I get a call from my agent, who scares the Jesus out of me, by the way. She's very aggressive, as they have to be. But she said, well, you know, we have this offer on the table. It's HarperCollins. It's not a very good offer in terms of money, but, you know, it's up to you if you want to shelve the book or not. And I said naively, well, I don't want to shelve it, but why don't we keep going out at, oh, Diane, she said, for heaven's sakes, no one else was interested in it. So I thought, well, I really feel good not only about myself, but about this book and the chances that anybody will ever read it. And she agreed in the end with my original editor that she did not feel it was a very good book, that it probably would die without a, you know, more than a half dozen readers or so, and at least we would have gotten that out of our system. So the fact that it became a bestseller is stunning, but there you have it. I mean, irony is a wonderful thing.
You know, Diane, I love this story, and can I tell you, not because I don't like agents and editors. I love my agent. I think she's a great woman, but nobody knows. Time I hear them tell me they know, it just drives me mad. You know,
mm-hmm.
I always think of, I interviewed Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Eagle. Do you remember that book?
Oh, I do indeed.
Okay, so it sold 44 million copies.
Right.
Okay. 10,000 words long. It's a weird book.
Mm-hmm.
44 million copies. Nobody wanted to publish it. I mean, nobody.
Right.
They sent it to everybody. And finally, he found there was a woman editor in 1970 who was a pilot. She was a pilot in 1970. How many of those do you think there are? She wrote to him saying, if you've got a project, I could try out. And he sent it to her and she published it. But there was no reason that book should have sold.
Right.
You know, by every logical standard of what a bestseller is, a book by from the point of view of a seagull. Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yep.
So now they want you to write a sequel. And how is that going?
You're
writing on sort of contract almost.
Yeah, and I have to say the first 3 or 4 months of working on it were really the same 3 or 4 months of getting settled in here in Minnesota. But it was very hard to connect with. It wasn't hard to connect with the characters because they really did make the whole thing go, but it was hard to bring a new story into it. It was kind of like going to the second family reunion and not wanting to tell the same stories over again that you told last year. But once the Senate felt like forever, but at about the 4 month mark, I made some pretty critical decisions, and all of them by accident. Just kind of as I was walking the dogs and things, but they brought the characters into full focus. They also gave me a few new characters to bring in, and they're just as cool and as fresh as I could have hoped for. So it is and isn't the sequel. It's the same new, it's the same basic characters with a couple of new ones thrown in there. And so as I'm sure you found too, there's a point at which you've created enough raw material, and I have a quote from you about that, in fact, where you come up with the answers from your own material, but you've got to get that first 100 pages or so done, and then you've got all this raw material to work with. And so once I reached that point and had a few epiphanies about new characters and so forth, now it's exactly what we were talking about with regard to your writing. It's very exciting, and I start every day really anxious to see what on earth is going to happen next. So,
I'm really glad to hear that, Diane. I'd hate to see you trying to force your way into some kind of, because really, a writer like yourself, it's not true. If I were in your position, I would be thinking this is not a sequel. I'm just going to have these characters tell another story. You know, I'm just going to tell another story about these characters.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I
ended up doing. You're
not
writing about a murder. You don't have a detective that you're following around Los Angeles to solve another crime. Totally different.
No. Anyway, so there's my very long answer to your question.
Oh, I like it. All right. Now, do you have another question for me?
I do, and I can't wait to ask you this one.
All right,
and
lay it on.
Again, it goes back to what you had in one of your blogs. You've written that writing is listening. That's your phrase.
Yes.
And I think that's brilliant. And I've told young writers, myself, in doing classes, that they as much as learning to write, what they really have to do is learn to listen to themselves think. And that's exactly what you're saying. So my question for you is, do you think in words, or do you think in either visual images or feelings, or how do you think when you're just wandering around?
Well, I mean, words come very quickly, but I have this, and so ultimately I ultimately think in words, but,
mm-hmm.
but all this, so here, you can quote me on this, all knowledge precedes expression, by which I mean, first you know the thing, either you see it or feel it, and then you choose the form of its expression. I've written music too. I went through a period where I was writing a lot of music, so the knowledge would come to me in a feeling I would want to turn into notes.
Mm-hmm.
So when I write, the idea comes to me in a feeling, or a simply an emotional truth, or an image, and then I quickly turn it into words. And most of my time writing, I realize, I've come to understand, like I say, if I'm writing that blog, which I usually do in about half an hour to 45 minutes, say. If I spend 45 minutes writing it, I would say I spend only 15 of that in language, in the language code. 30 minutes is spent trying to see what it is I want to say, and not until I see it clearly, whether it's an idea, because a lot of the times I'm writing about concepts, you know, whether I see it clearly so I can turn it into something concrete and visual. But until I see it clearly, I don't let myself go towards words. And once I see
that's
it clearly,
interesting.
It's as if there's like a telescope in my mind, and I'm focusing it. And once it's clearing and really clear, the language comes automatically, almost.
Wow.
And if I'm not seeing it clearly and I'm trying to write, I can't write because I can't see what I'm trying to describe. It's like if you're trying to see something across the lake, you're going to describe it in the vaguest of details unless you focus that lens, and then you can see it clearly and you can bring it forth. And so I've come to be patient, and the listening is really that same quality. I'm putting myself into a receptive state to hear it. Hear is quite, is, you know, I'm saying that word loosely, but to receive the information so that I can then translate it.
Wow, how interesting. I mean, that's an amazingly different process. And I think you must be much more patient than I am. Because
get into the flow of your story and the characters start talking to you, don't they?
They do. That's true.
Yes, that's what happens a lot with fiction. It happens.
There.
But you're doing the same thing as me, Diane, but it's happening so fast. And sometimes it happens very fast. Like this morning when I finished the book, I wrote the last chapter in one day, in 1 hour and a half dash, but I could feel the whole thing in me. I didn't even need to focus. I just sat down, out it came, you know.
Right.
So in a way, I had spent the day before focusing on it, so that when I sat down, it was already there for me.
And see, that's perhaps one of the biggest differences between writing memoirs or writing essays, if you will, and writing fiction, is I don't know that I'd have the patience to write other than fiction, which I essentially, on a good day, hear and transcribe, and that's exactly the opposite of what you're describing.
Well, it's not, it's, you know, here's the interesting thing, Diane, is I wrote fiction for years. That's all I wrote. And the difference between memoir and fiction is a razor's edge. Because it all happened to me, but here's the truth. If I get into an argument with my wife, say, and we get into this 20-minute argument, blah, 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 back and forth, and we reach the end of the argument, and we try and remember how we got there, we've each got a different story of how we arrived at that, you know, end place. And the fact is we already can't remember how it started 20 minutes before. So when I remember what happened 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I'm not saying, I don't make it up, but I'm having to reimagine it. And strangely, it's very close experience, because even when I'm writing fiction, if I'm writing about people that don't exist, I'm still going like a method actor back into my own life to create the feelings again. Now, I have to get this question to you, because I know there's someone listening to this show today who I know is getting ready to submit to her first agents ever. She's never done. She's finally finished her first book, and I know she's listening, and I know she's going to submit to some agents. And so I would like you, I'm too close to her to give, I've given her some advice, but She needs to hear from someone that's not me. So
what
does this person need to bear in mind as she begins this part of her journey? She's just finished her first book, finally, ever, and she's screwed up the courage to go approach her agents finally.
Oh, I thought, well, first of all, hallelujah, and my hat's off to you, because it is the most amazing change from being essentially alone with your work and being ready to take it elsewhere. And I hope that you had a glass of wine or champagne and a lovely meal, and if you didn't, you should do that right away.
Absolutely.
Having said that, you need to screw up your courage and your confidence in your ability as a writer and dig in for the long haul, because having discussed the state of the literary arts, unfortunately, as they are at the moment, this is going to be a slog. If you're very lucky, your first agent who you approach, or two or three agents, are going to snap you up and it's going to be a breeze, but it often doesn't work that way. I know you know that. The old chestnut that it's harder to get an agent than it is to get a book published is in fact true, at least by my experience and those around me. So screw your courage up, be confident, don't count the days, don't try to focus on it more than you have to, and just be prepared to wait this out and keep on going. And again, I this is an amazing moment that you've reached to finish a work. In itself is so worthy of celebration. So, at a girl,
it absolutely is.
You
know, I took a writing class once in my life. I needed to get out of my cave. I was in a cave. I thought, this is time. I've got to do something different. And I do not like writing classes, but I'm going to take one just so I can meet other human beings who write.
Right.
And I really like these people. I'm still friends with them. But what I noticed is no one was finishing any books. You know, and like no one had finished books. I was like, oh my God, there are all these people writing, but no one was finishing books. It was a big deal when someone finished a draft of something.
Right.
And so I would say to this person, it is a big deal that you finished it. Anyone can think they want to start a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can just
mm-hmm.
start a book. I'm sure you've met them and they've come to your readings, right? And said, I've got this idea.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one thing to actually write it and rewrite it and get it to the point where you think you can submit it.
Yep. Oh,
and a lot of people don't even submit it.
Yeah, well, you've probably met those same people that I have in classes or readings where, you know, they have a book, and gosh, if they just had more time, they would write that book.
Yeah.
And then you say, and I have gotten to the point where I say it openly now, if you are a writer, then you should be writing. If you're not writing, you're not a writer, and you do not have a book. And it's a little bald, and I probably need to back off on that a little bit, but it's...
No, but they got to know. And the thing is, you know, Diane, you got to know this, is that one of the beautiful things about writing and the arts in general, and I think it's the great gift to people who go into the arts, is that you can't do it unless you love to do it. You know, I could bartend, and I didn't love to bartend, but I could make a living as a bartender. And I've met countless lawyers who don't love to be lawyers but make a great living as lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature
mm-hmm.
of the arts is such... you cannot do it, and I have my theories behind it, but it's too long and involved to explain why, but you cannot really do it unless you actually love the experience of sitting down and writing. It's not enough to want to be, you actually have to love to write. And I know
you do. Absolutely. I do, and in fact, my daughter, when she was a professional actor, had a manager who drove her crazy, but the manager always used to intone, love the work, and we used to joke about it, but you know, I understand that. Because that's exactly it. If you don't like the actual process of writing, you shouldn't be doing it, because it's unfortunately true that the majority of writers are not going to be published, or not in a way that they, you know, hope to be on the top of the New York Times bestseller list. So if you don't love writing for its own sake, and if you wouldn't do it for free, then you probably ought to find something else to do, because really, in the end, it is the process, I think, rather than the marketing and getting the agent and the publisher and all that stuff. That's not the fun stuff. That's the business end of it.
I agree. And it's a great gift, because if you don't love to write, go do something you love. You know, do something you love, for God's sakes. You know, there's no point of being this earth just to do what you think you have to do and make babies and then die. You know, go do something you love. And if it's not writing, who cares?
Yes,
you know, go be president of your PTA. It doesn't matter. Go do something you love.
But having said that, and I heard you a minute ago basically say that if you want to be an insurance salesperson, if you want to work for a bank, if you want to be a mortgage lender, whatever, you can do it even if you're not great at it.
Yes.
The unfortunate thing about the arts is you can do it if you're not great at it, but you're probably never going to have your work reach any kind of audience. And
no,
that
you're
always
probably not.
Is so unfair, you know. I want to, even if I'm not that great a writer, I would like to be out there and have an audience, but it's just, it's not a forgiving, well, the arts are never forgiving because there's never enough money to
yeah,
support.
Yeah, but you know what,
all.
Though? I will say this, though. I think, I read and I interview a lot of writers whose work
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't qualify as what I want aesthetically work to do. You know, that
right.
I have a lot of qualms with. To me, I've interviewed writers who I feel like, God, that feels like a first draft, you know. But
mm-hmm.
it's out there, and it's being read. And,
yeah.
And so this what – it's weird to say. I love what I consider good writing, but sometimes
mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing is that the writer is understands why that work is valuable, knows why someone would want to read this in a way that I could never understand, you know.
Yes.
Because
yes.
there's some writing that just, for me, doesn't seem to hit the mark, and yet they have found their editor and they have found their readers, you know, so you just...
Well, and that was what was so heartbreaking about Hannah's Dream getting turned down twice.
Because you knew it was good, didn't you?
Well, I didn't, because I thought if it was good, my first editor was a goddess, as is my current editor, but I thought, well, she, you know, she's a senior editor at Random House, at Doubleday, she's supposed to know if it's good or not, and if she's telling me it's not, then I'm more than willing to say, I guess it's not. I mean, I have never been so secure as a writer that I can say, no, this is a great work. And
yeah.
one day someone will agree with me, and I'm more than inclined to say, well, I guess it sucks, then better move on.
Right.
So,
well,
so
it's hard in that position. They do seem to hold a lot of power. The editors.
Yes, they do.
So we have just a couple minutes left. Diane, do you want to ask one more question, or would you like me to ask you one?
Well, let's see. I want to ask you this, but I'm hoping that it isn't tactless. And that,
okay.
my question to you is, as a writer, how does your ego, head of your creative self, do with talking to writers who are not, in your opinion, and I'm not giving, I mean, the
Nope, I know where this is headed.
You interview, you love, but say you don't, and that
well,
writer
that,
has
and you know what? That's a great question, Diane. And one of the best interviews I did early on was with a writer whose book was the first book I couldn't finish because I just simply couldn't stand it. And I was like, oh, God.
Uh-huh.
I went and I interviewed this writer, and I loved the experience. I loved the writer, and I could see that the writer loved the book, and I realized it didn't matter. The book was like a question that
right.
the writer needed to ask. The fact that I didn't need to ask it or that the answer he supplied wasn't my answer was irrelevant. I could see when
right.
I met him that the question the book asked was authentic to him, and the way he answered
right.
it was authentic to him, and it was a relief. Because I don't want to sit around judging people as good or bad. I want everyone to be,
right.
you know, there's no value in it for me to look at someone and say, oh, they shouldn't have done that, and why are they boring me?
Right.
This person loved their work as much as I did, and
mm-hmm.
that... And then we could share in the love of working. And so I have
right.
come to realize, because I have pretty narrow taste.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have much time now. I have pretty narrow taste, but I realize it doesn't matter that the love all writers share of the work is what really what bonds us together. And
well,
so I've learned not to care at all, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. And you don't end up saying, why not me? Why am I not the one
no.
working in millions?
No, in fact, when I was interviewing them, when I hadn't had any kind of success at all, I wanted to sit with people who were having success because I knew how to write.
Right.
I knew I knew how to write, but I wasn't having success, so I wanted to be with them so I could know what it feels like. Just know what it feels like, and I would follow it from there. And on that note, Diane, I'm going to say thank you so much. I knew it was going to be fun, and it was. What do you know?
It absolutely was. Thank you.
Well, take care, Diane. It was great to talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, everybody, that was Diane Hammond. I do love the woman. Check out her new book when it's released. We don't know the title yet, but it will be the sequel to Hannah's Dream. Thank you for stopping by. Remember, only write what you love. Only do what you love. Life is too short otherwise. We'll see you next week. My guest, I believe, will be Carol Casella. Bye for now.